Now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Welcome to the program. It is It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. Tyler Friel and Kayla Molzan in for Dave Mullarkey on this Tuesday, November 14th. Hey, we've got a great show for you. Today we're going to start off with open talk, so if there's something on your mind, please hit us up on the phone line. 724-283-2525 is the number. It's your turn, so make sure you can talk about whatever you like. Kayla and I have a list of topics, but if you have something you want to sound off on, we invite you to call in 724-283-2525. And the holidays, of course, are coming right around the corner, and when Thanksgiving comes, the next day, of course, means Black Friday. So is Black Friday still a thing with all the internet shopping that you can do and all the deals that are really on all year long? Is Black Friday still something that people participate in? We're going to find out. We'll talk with Dr. Lou Sabina. He's a professor of business at Butler County Community College. We'll also talk with Dan Tobin of the Red Cross. We're getting to that time of year, obviously, where we're turning the heaters on. And Kayla, you've seen it already. A number of house fires have started because of, you know, malfunctioning heaters.
And they really increase this time of year. And it's kind of a no-brainer because you are turning the heat on. But Dan has some really startling statistics for everybody that the number of house fires truly skyrocket at the end of November, through the holidays too, because of all the dangers with Christmas trees being in the house, lights on the trees, candles being lit. So it really is a busy time of the year for the Red Cross. So we want to get out there in front of it, really, and try to, you know, stop it before all these disasters happen.
And then, of course, the holidays are here, and a lot of people get into a giving mood, which is fantastic. Unfortunately, though, in today's day and age with the internet and with all these different places that may be trying to pass themselves off as charitable organizations, we're trying to figure out which ones are legitimate and which ones are not. And so we'll talk with President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau's Give.org. His name is Art Taylor, and we'll bring him in via telephone. And Kayla, you'll talk with him because you are our guru of charities around here.
I would say scams. We have a story in the news every week on scams. That's why I really wanted to talk to this guy, because everybody wants to be so generous around the holidays, but we're on alert. Like, we have police telling us every week, don't, you know, when somebody calls you and asks for money, don't give it to them. If somebody comes to your door, don't let them in, because there could be an accomplice running in your back door. I mean, that truly is in the news every single week. So Mr. Taylor has some tips for everybody on how to give, but to do it in the right way.
So that's all down the road on today's edition of It's Your Turn. But first, like I said, we're starting with open talk. That telephone number is 724-283-2525. A story coming out of last night locally, Butler Area School District, really primarily doing with the water. Kayla, you covered this story so far this morning. What have you learned? What's really going on with the whole water situation inside the school district?
Yeah, well, we've been following the problems at Summit Township Elementary School. That's not news to anybody. It's been going on for almost a year now, and we're learning. We had a reporter, Ryan Saylor, at the school board meeting last night, and things are moving along. They need to get the kids, the Summit kids, who haven't been able to go to school at Summit because they've been fixing the water problems out there and replacing the pipes and running a line to hook up to public water through Pennsylvania American Water. All the steps are almost in place to make that happen, but the kids are still going to school at Broad Street Elementary in the city. I know I was engaging with some people on our social media, and they were hoping, you know, they were parents of kids, hoping the transition could take place maybe when the kids were off for the Thanksgiving holiday or even the Christmas holiday. And it's not, you know, it's not known yet if that'll be able to happen or if they'll have to wait until January. I do know that all of the water fixtures within Summit, we're told, have been replaced completely. Now they're running tests. They're going to do tests on every fixture tomorrow, check those results, and then do another round of tests on the same fixtures next week, check those results. If those all check out, and when I say check out, I mean they're below the standards. It's the Department of Environmental Protection has certain standards for how much lead and copper can be in the water. If they are below that line, then they'll be able to talk about how they're going to get these kids back. But it's been a trying time for the school district. I mean, I know they're doing whatever they can. They, I've talked to the superintendent a number of times. I mean, they, he doesn't want to move the kids in if there's going to be additional problems. You know, his main goal was to make sure all the problems are corrected before we ever think about moving the kids back.
Yeah, and the logistical nightmare that I'm sure would have to follow. Of course, you know where the kids are, but the fact that you have to uproot these classrooms out of Broad Street, that includes the teachers, the administrators, the maintenance staff that has to be responsible for something that isn't an overnight deal. It's just going to be, I'm sure, a nightmare for them to get it back and get that school up and functioning like Broad Street, I'm sure, is doing right now.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not the only, Butler isn't the only school district that's dealt with this. I mean, Knox, the South Butler School District, has had some problems with their water. School districts across the state, I mean, these are buildings in a lot of cases that are older buildings. And, you know, it's a problem that I believe is going to keep popping up as we go throughout the years. This was a huge story for the Butler Area School District, though. I mean, the ramifications, we lost a superintendent over it. There was other movement around in terms of the officials
technically
working
lost
at the
two superintendents, one assistant, and the top guy.
Absolutely, yeah. So this was a huge story, and to think that we're still talking about it, and the kids aren't even back in their proper school yet, it's amazing how long it's taken.
And it's been a trying time for the school district, and I think they would admit that. You know, going through the consolidation process, going through this whole water, you know, disaster type thing, because that's frankly what it was. And then you had to get a new superintendent in there. This hasn't been the easiest road for the school district over the next few years, and or this past few years. And when you look into the future, it doesn't look like it's going to get any easier. And this isn't any fault to new administrators or the teachers that are there. But when you look at the demographics of Butler, and when you look at the demographics across Western Pennsylvania, there aren't as many kids as there used to be. And you've got financial issues across the entire state when it comes to education. We're talking higher education, and we saw that last year with the state system schools and the faculty that went on strike. And then we're seeing the ramifications of just deals that were made in the past that they didn't think would catch up to them, that now that's happened. And so the money in public education isn't really there. And because the state doesn't have any money, it doesn't really look like it's going to be there anytime soon. So the way that I look at it, I am not envious of any higher education official, of any teacher, because I do think they're going through some rather difficult times, and I think they would admit that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the superintendents, I think in a lot of districts, they have to figure out how to pay for things that need done with absolutely no money. And it's like, how do you do that? Also happening at last night's school board meeting at Butler, they had to decide, and they did decide, to borrow, it's like $9.6 million to do capital projects that are absolutely needed.
Yeah.
And I know our reporter, Ryan, as I said, Ryan Saylor was there, and he said, as the school board members are voting for this, they're saying, I don't want to vote for this, but there's no other viable option. I don't want to borrow more money. But they have to get this stuff done. Superintendent Brian White said these repairs need to be done. And this was his direct quote. The kids need to stay dry and warm in these buildings. I mean, there are roof leaks happening. There's road repair problems. This isn't something that you can push off. It's stuff that had to be done, but it means that they have to borrow, take out another bond for $9.5 million.
And this is what we're talking about. They just have no money. These are much needed repairs that you can't fault the district for taking a $10 million loan out. But as you said, you have projects that need to be done and no money to do it with. And so this is your only option. I mean, you can't have schools falling apart. You simply can't.
Yeah, and we're obviously simplifying
extremely
it down.
Extremely watering this down.
Yeah, it's hard. Like you said, I'm not envious of any public school administrators because I don't, I don't know how they're doing it.
We're continuing open talk here. 724-283-2525 is our number. A few health stories, Kayla, coming out yesterday, including a big one that could affect, well, half of our listening audience because it's affecting half of America.
Yeah, this came out yesterday that the American Heart Association was reworking, I guess, the standards for what's considered high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And I believe it used to be, what, 140 over...
140 over 90.
And now it's 130 over 80.
Correct.
Which I think already isn't good because a lot of us already had high blood pressure to begin with, and now they're lowering, you know, the standard on us, and it's like, oh, geez. I think the reason why they did this, because if you look at it, there's a little asterisk there, and it says if you do fall between the 130 and 140 mark, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have to be put on high blood pressure medications. Yeah. You could. Some of you might have to. But others, they just want you to be alerted and then try to correct it through a better diet, through exercise, that sort of thing.
Yeah, only 2% of people who are part of that, you know, all of a sudden became above the standard, you know, the suggested requirement. I guess that's kind of an oxymoron. The 2%, they're only saying 2% of those folks will require immediate medication. So you're probably not in that mix if you're listening. But again, they're suggesting, look, what we were saying earlier, we're going to tweak that a little bit because we think you'll be healthier if you can get it below this.
Yeah. I just think, I mean, Americans are already in trouble. I mean, we see the obesity rates skyrocketing, the childhood obesity skyrocketing. You know, we're not doing well here in America in terms of our
health
and well-being in many cases. So I think this is really eye-opening. And that's compared to, you know, other countries, too. If you look at stats, a lot of people in other nations take care of their bodies a lot, you know, better than we do. And for whatever reason, I mean, we talked a little earlier on a morning show today. I just think our culture makes it so difficult to take care of ourselves, whether it's eating healthy. I mean, we need something fast. There's fast food joints on every corner. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's we're all so busy. How do you even get, I know the recommended exercise is 30 minutes a day. That shouldn't be that much. I mean, we're awake for what, 15, 16, 17, 18 hours a day.
Surely feels like it.
30 minutes shouldn't be that much, but a lot of people's schedules just don't even let that happen, and it's amazing.
Yeah, you're running around at 1,000 miles per hour, and this is something that I mentioned. You know, I was able to get lunch today at like around 11 o'clock, but sometimes, you know, you don't find time until 2 o'clock, or you're just running around, and you don't want to go home and make something. You'd rather just stop off somewhere, have somebody else make it, go in, pay for it, walk out, and then eat it, because it just makes it so much easier. But 9 times out of 10, when you're going that route, A, it's expensive, and B, it's not that healthy. So you've got these two major ramifications on the wallet and your body just because we're so strung out on time and how busy we are.
Yeah. I mean, I was even in a grocery store yesterday. And if you really look, I mean, if you want to make something, it takes so much longer than everything's already prepackaged. You know what I mean? So if you're going in, you want to make stuffed chicken breasts. You know, you can just, instead of buying the chicken breast, buying whatever stuff, you know, doing the whole thing, you could just walk over to the frozen section and they already have it for you. You just mic it up or throw it in the oven. But if you look at how much sodium is in that, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I think that would lead to, that's one cause of high blood pressure.
Yeah, I was looking at, they're not an advertiser, so I don't care. Hungry Man frozen meals. If you ever look at those are in the freezer aisle. Whoa, are those just horrible for you? I mean, the sodium level, that's like takes care of 5 days for you. Have one of those, your salt levels would just go through the roof. But that's the type of thing that we didn't really realize was that unhealthy for us. I honestly think until about 20 years ago. Maybe someone did, but the average American was like, mm-hmm. Wow, I can take this. I put it in the microwave. 3 minutes later, I've got an entire meal for me. Mm-hmm. This is wonderful. And we were like, eh. Until now, we're like, hey, this isn't that good for you.
And I wonder if the market will respond to, you know, these numbers going down when, you know, as other health organizations come out and say, you know, I feel like every day we're getting a new standard. We need to take a step back. Yeah. We've seen it. I mean, we talked earlier today that a lot of chain restaurants will put the calories.
Yeah.
How many calories are in a dish up on their menus. And I think that's really caught on. I know I take that into account.
Yeah, and a lot of Americans, I think, are. There was a new study that came out. This was in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette today. This is from the journal called Obesity, a very simple title. But they looked at numbers from 2003 compared to 2014. So in 2003, on a daily basis, 79.7% of children were consuming sugary drinks, mainly soda pop, or as we just plainly refer to it as pop. And that was 61.5% of adults back in 2003. 2014, that number has dropped nearly 20%, down to 60.7% of children drinking sugary drinks on a given day. That number in adults, it's down to 50%. So those are dramatic decreases in sugary drink numbers.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for whatever reason, whether it's education or, whatever it is.
I think it's education.
I look at the, I'm not a regular pop drinker, but sometimes I'll get a craving for something, but then you go to buy it and it's like, there's 250 calories in that little can of Coke or Pepsi, whatever you're drinking. It really does make you think. I'd be curious, and this is open line, so people can call in. If people pay attention to the calorie count, you know, when they go to a restaurant, open the menu and it's up there, or you go to, you know, a fast food place and see it up there. At first, when they were talking about doing this, because it's relatively new, right? It's only been around a couple years.
The calorie counting thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say maybe 5-10 years.
At first, when they talked about doing it, I was like, if I want, you know, a hamburger, I'm just going to go and get a hamburger. I don't really care how many calories it is. And that is, I think, true in a sense. But if your schedule is dictating that you're eating out more, if you're doing this, you know, more than once in a blue moon, you kind of are like, okay, maybe I should take into account how many calories I'm eating.
And I'm a huge red meat guy. Like, I will eat steaks, I will eat burgers, I will eat ribs, and I do it as often as I can because I really like the taste. No, I'll eat chicken and turkey. You know, the vegetarian, vegan lifestyle is simply not for me. I know it. Those people say they're healthier, but I just could not do it, simply couldn't. But something as simple as a hamburger, I know now, just looking at the calorie count, cheeseburger, hamburger, the amount of calories that are in cheese, you know, so sure, a red meat hamburger isn't the greatest, healthiest decision, but if you want a hamburger, maybe just don't do the cheese. There are small steps to do when this all circles back to that blood pressure count that you can, I'm not a doctor, but you can take these little small steps. If you're drinking pop, I drink pop. I had a Dr. Pepper before the show. I'm only having one Dr. Pepper. I'm not having two or three during the day. You know, you almost just want to focus on portion control or where can I cut those different calories while still enjoying the things that I like.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You don't have to go full on vegan on us, right? And, you know, just eating kale sandwiches for lunch.
I wonder if the American Heart Association's decision to roll these out right before the holidays, I mean, they waited literally 8 days before Thanksgiving, if that was strategic or not. I do think people should get tested if they aren't aware of what their blood pressure is. You know what I mean? And it wouldn't hurt to know.
And there are easy ways to do it. And I don't know the exact accuracy, but there are plenty of those blood pressure monitors at a lot of pharmacies you go to. And so they have that stuff readily available. Or if you're going to your regular check, it just seems like everybody's checking blood pressure now. I went to the eye doctor and they took my blood pressure. I was kind of like, wait, why does this matter for my eyes? But there's a lot of different avenues for you to get your blood pressure checked. And it's just a good thing to keep a monitor on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other, though, results from that study that I did find a bit interesting, this one wasn't shocking. Since 2003 compared to 2014, coffee and tea, the amount that people drank, that remained steady. There really wasn't fluctuation one way or the other on that. Here's not a shocker. Alcohol was steady as well. There was a very, very slight increase for people above 60 with an increase in alcohol consumption, but they basically said it was so insignificant that it didn't really change any results. So people are drinking coffee and tea and alcohol as much as they used to be. Juice, this circles back to sugary drinks, has actually gone down. A lot of adults have bought into the idea that sugary juice isn't that good for you. So as a correspondence to that, I believe we've seen an uptick in the amount of water that people drink. In fact, they saw water has actually increased in every age group. It is open talk, so we head to the phone lines. Hello, caller. Thanks for calling into the program, and welcome.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling primarily about the bond issue for the school district. What is it, almost $10
million? That's, they took out a $10 million loan, yes. Close to
just,
it.
Some of the specifics on that, is that to buy material, or is that like, do they have to hire massive contractor teams, or...
Yeah, I think, I mean, they have to replace a lot of roofs. They have to hire contractors to do this work, repair some roads. They're going to replace the swimming pool inside the senior high school as well as some other repairs. So when you add it all up, comes to almost $9.6 million, I believe.
Wow. I just wondered about, they have already repair craftsmen on the payroll. I just wondered what are they responsible for?
Yeah. They have a maintenance department, absolutely. But I think this work, I mean, when you're replacing roofs, I think it goes above and beyond what they're, you know, able to do.
I think, caller, they have to bid these jobs out as a requirement to these bond loans. I don't think the maintenance staff I don't want to say they're not capable of handling this, but this isn't something that is in their purview, from what my understanding is.
Yeah, you just wonder what kind of preventive maintenance might have been done in the past to prevent this stuff from falling into its deteriorated state.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, these buildings are, older. I believe it's four of the roofs on four different elementary schools needs replaced. So, I mean, this problem could have been going on for years, and they might have, you know, patched holes up until this point, and now it's, you know, over and beyond that.
Yeah, that's a nice thing to know for possible tax increases, or who knows, there's no end to it. But I don't know, you guys, I have a question about it's a new position on the county government. He's an economist, mm-hmm. Mark Gordon. Do you remember when he was hired a year or so ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything in the news about him or his work, and just wondered if you might know anything on what he actually does. Is his findings and predictions, is that public knowledge to study for any small businesses, or is it just, I mean, a certain closed loop for whoever might be in the club, or what?
No, it's definitely, we did have a story a couple months ago, and I don't want to speak out on it because I don't want to misquote him, but I do know that he does a lot of work behind the scenes, and he's definitely critical. The county commissioners, I mean, they are really happy with his work from what I'm told. But I don't want to say too much more because I don't want to say something wrong.
Right. Yeah, well, whatever. But I just wondered if his predictions or whatever might be available for public to
I'm sure if you would call the county, someone at the county, they could probably get in touch with you and confirm that, because Kayla and I don't want to speculate on exactly what his specific roles are. As a county employee, caller, I would imagine that he has to be a very public and open with what he's doing, because, like you said, those are your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, the taxpayers have a new employee on the payroll. They're just, I didn't know you guys go to meetings and whatever. I didn't know if you might possibly have any idea about where you might find his work to read or whatever video. I don't know. But
thanks so much for calling. I appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break. We'll come back right after this. We're on Open Talk. 724-283-2525 is the number. Tyler Friel, Kayla Moles, and in for Dave Malarkey. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Does your pharmacy tell you your wait time for a prescription will take a half an hour or longer, or maybe won't even be ready until the next day? Don't think this is your only option. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, we have made it a priority to take care of our customers' needs first, because your time is precious. Most wait times are under 10 minutes. So don't you think it's time to make a switch to Institute Hill Pharmacy, located at 937 East Jefferson Street, or find us on Facebook. Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Welcome back to the program. We are in Open Talk, 724-283-2525. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Welcome to It's Your Turn.
Hello?
Hello, yes, you're on the air.
Hey, in regards to, those new quote-unquote statistics about high blood pressure.
Yes.
I'm going to use popular, unpopular word here, collusion. I would not be at all surprised if there's collusion between those groups and the pharmacies. It's all about the money. It's all about the money. They change the statistics, and all of a sudden they scare everybody into, oh, my God, I have to get blood pressure medicine.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting you say that. I will say that they did come out, and a lot of doctors today, saying that they think, even though with these changes, only 2% of people will have to be put on high blood pressure meds. Sure, that's still 2% more than was, so I see what you're saying. But
well, that's how greed works anymore. You know, they hit us with smaller bites, so we don't notice. But time will tell. You know, time will tell.
I still want you to eat healthy and get enough sleep, okay?
Oh, yeah, we have to take care of ourselves. They sure aren't. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Too. It is interesting, though. I will invite people. If anybody's ever watched, there's a really good documentary on Netflix. I think I've told you this before. It's called What the Health. And it is really eye-opening and looks at, and you have to take it for what it is, you know, and I would want everybody to watch it and make their own decisions. But it looks at, like, the American Heart Association and other groups and just how sometimes it's interesting the food that they say to eat when you have other groups saying, well, that's not even that healthy. And it's just it's a interesting look into our food industry.
The pharmaceutical industry, has become more and more attacked, I would say, from both sides of the aisle than it has been in the past. And this has probably just evolved over the past 2 years, where now you've always had, not to politicize this issue, but you know, with what this caller brings up, you've had people on the left say, you know, big pharma makes too much money, and the Republicans on the right, who had always been accused of, you know, siding with, you know, CEOs and corporate sponsors. You start to hear a few of them now go after big pharma just because that's what's the popular opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll agree. I think the rate of prescription drugs are too high. You know, I think anybody would agree with it, just like I think my taxes are too high. So, you know, there's always, we think that these things cost so much money, and maybe they do, maybe they don't. I understand that some of that drives innovation, and this is the whole, I mean, this argument could be fleshed out in an economics class
yeah.
for an hour, something we're not going to dive into. But I think overall, when we talk about the blood pressure and new standards, just watch what, like you said, watch what you're eating, watch what you're drinking. There are steps that you can take. Like the caller said, look, it's on us. You know,
right, right.
Go to the doctor, but take the doctor's hands out of it. Eat healthier, exercise, do the small things that you can, if you can do them,
right,
to
right.
help yourself along. The best health is the health that you take into your own hands.
Right, right. Because it's your body, and it's the only one you're getting. I think if I would, say I would go to the doctor, I don't have high blood pressure right now. At least I don't think I do. If I would go to the doctor and he would say, okay, we, you know, with these new standards, you fall into, you know,
You're over the limit.
Unless, you know, he could provide me a reason why I needed to get on medication that day,
mm-hmm.
I personally would want to, you know, look at the other factors. Okay, I'll start exercising more. I'll start eating less processed foods and see if my body responded to that
yep.
before I would get on my medication. That's just what I would do.
Yeah, and I think that's at least people, you know, who are our age, where I think we're still in control of the future of our health. You know, there are some people who thinks just
medication is necessary. And
yeah.
A lot of times it is hereditary. You know, it
yeah.
is hereditary.
And sometimes you can't control that, different things. But when you're of a younger age, or when you are still feel that you are in control of where you are in terms of your health, what you can do, and even if you are older, you can eat healthier.
I don't even think it. I mean, age does have something to do with it, but I've read so many studies that if you make small lifestyle changes, you really can make a big difference, no matter your age.
Well, last thing we want to hit on, because our next guest is going to be Dr. Lou Sabina, not to jump one topic to the other, but we got Black Friday coming up next Friday. Kayla, have you ever done the Black Friday shopping?
Have I ever done it?
Have you ever done it?
No, I never
really
did. I'm trying to think. After college, I got this job, and we always have to work. So I never was able to go out on Black Friday. I do remember in college I had a babysitting, a nannying job, and the parents were actually going to pay me to go to stand in line at one of the big box stores to get their kid whatever the big present was because they didn't want to do it. And I didn't do it for some reason. I don't know why. They could have paid me to do Black Friday. But yeah, it just seems like it's not so much of a thing anymore. I mean, I saw as early as it was last week, they were saying Black Friday started, like one big box store was like, Black Friday starts today. And it was like November 6th.
Yeah.
And just with the online retailers and, you know, the Amazons, it just seems like it's not so much of a thing as in the past. So I'm anxious to see what this doctor has to say.
With the future of retail and a lot of people seeing brick-and-mortar stores go by the wayside, the one hesitancy, there are actually two hesitancies that I have with online shopping. Because I've been burnt on it before, and I've been able to return it, but the size actually isn't my size. You would think men's, small, medium, larges, extra large, would all fall into the same category, but they don't. Don't let them fool you. There's one large that's larger than another large. Mm-hmm. I found that out. Shoes, the same way. An 11 should be an 11, mm-hmm. no matter what. It's not. So you dive into that, not getting it on, you know, trying it on, different things like that. The other thing, shipping and handling seems like it's gone up by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get by, you know, even if it's a $25 product, you're getting $25 worth of shipping. I would rather go to the brick and mortar place. Maybe I'm just a little bit old fashioned. The convenience of online shopping is tremendous. You don't have to go out. You don't have to brave the weather, the crowds, the people. But you pay that shipping and handling mm-hmm. cost. It's the convenience fee you're paying. So I don't think brick and mortar stores will go away entirely because people do like to try things on. But I think our generation is going to be more susceptible to buying stuff online just out of convenience. But I'd like them to refine the sizes. I have a big gripe about that.
Yeah. Different brands can, you know, the fit is so different.
What the heck is up with that?
And usually you can always send it back for free, but it's such a pain to me. You know what I mean? You have to repackage it.
Yeah.
A lot of times you have to take it to the shipping center and it's a pain.
Yeah, so anyways, we'll dive into that conversation and more. Black Friday on the way. We've also got a few more guests. Dan Tobin of the Red Cross. Kayla, you talked to him about heating issues.
Mm-hmm. And just tips, you know, this time of year that you can do to protect yourself. A lot of people will turn on alternate heating sources. You know, we're talking the space heaters. Some people, you'll be surprised, would do some very interesting things, like keep the oven doors open and, you know, stuff like that to supplement the heat mm-hmm. inside their homes, and it's not a good idea. And Dan is, you know, he's right in the front lines. He goes to these fire scenes and sees the devastation that can happen if you're careless.
And also, you'll chat with Art Taylor of the Better Business Bureau's give.org, because unfortunately for us, there are some scams out there, especially when mm-hmm. it comes to online and phone organizations, or quote-unquote organizations, passing off as charities.
Yeah, this is I would really recommend everybody to listen to this segment. He offers some good tips. If, you know, you obviously want to be generous, especially during the holiday season, but you have to be wary that your money is actually going to the right organization. So he offers some really valuable tips that if you are a regular donor to these nonprofits and different charities, you'll want to tune in.
And that's all coming up next. We've got a full show on the way for you. It's Tyler Friel, Kayla Molesey, and in for Dave Malarkey. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit
Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Welcome back to the program, listeners. Tyler Friel, Kayla Moles, and in for Dave Malarkey on WISR. And we head out to the phone lines where we are joined by Dr. Lou Sabina. He's a professor of business at Butler County Community College, and he's also a professor of education at Stetson University in Florida. First off, Lou, thanks for joining us. And I'm assuming the weather is just a bit warmer there than it is in Butler.
It is perfect down here. I love being down here.
Anyways, thanks again for joining us. And what we're talking about, we have Black Friday coming up here, obviously, next Friday. And this used to be a big, grandiose thing. Do you think it has that same impact that it used to? And if it doesn't, or it does, why or why not?
I think it still does, but it does for less people now. I think we used to have a system with Black Friday, and I've been going out with my wife for the last 6 years, going out for all the shopping and all the bargains. The bargains are still just as good. It's the fact that now we used to have people, I would say 10, 15 years ago, that pick one store out and they'd scout out that store, that'd be there, that'd be ready to go, and then that would be it. They'd do Target, they'd do Walmart, they'd do Best Buy, they'd do Sears, and then they'd be done. Now, I think the people that are doing it are a lot more deliberate and strategic, where they're basically saying, okay, Target's going to open at 6. I'm going to be here at 6. My partner, my wife, my friend is going to be at this other location at 8, and they're going to be in this line. And they're jumping back and forth between places, using the services that are available online in order to find what they want and jumping between places. But it's less people that are doing it now than ever before, but the people that are doing it are more strategic. I also think they're spending more money as well, because they're doing it as a way to kind of hit a lot more stores. So I think the crowds have declined at a lot of these places, which, you know, we've seen traditionally tracked through the media. They have declined, but the people that go are spending more money. That is what my gut would tell me.
That makes sense. I know, Dr. Sabina, you mentioned you and your wife, you know, go out. In years past, you know, it was always you could drive. I was driving home from Thanksgiving dinner still, and there were lines forming outside the Targets and outside the Walmarts. I haven't seen that lately. But you mentioned the different strategies, which I think is interesting. You know, back in the day, so to speak, you would look through, you know, whatever you got in your Sunday paper, and that little leaflet would be what you do. Now you're online, you know, you're on Twitter, you're getting emails constantly from these distributors. So the strategy is just really completely different.
There's a website, it's www.bfads.net, and they will create a table that has every single bargain and say, okay, Target has this for $2.99, but Walmart has it for $2.79. And I think sites like that have been very deliberate in what they're putting out there so people can plan. And then you also know whether or not those sales are going to be available online or not online.
Mm-hmm.
80% of the products that you're going to find on Black Friday are available at the same exact time online. But there's only about, you know, 10 to 20% that are considered doorbusters, where you have to wait in the line for them. And even then, it's going to the more targeted locations. Here's a perfect example for you. If I was living back in Pennsylvania right now, and I had to decide, and I'm in the Cranberry area, and I'm deciding where I want to go to, do I want to go to the city of Pittsburgh, to a Best Buy closer to the city, maybe in North Allegheny in the North Hills, or do I want to go to the Cranberry one? The North Allegheny one is going to have more of the doorbuster items just because they're a larger volume store.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if there's less of a crowd, I'm better off going to the larger store to get in line for the doorbuster items. The example that I always used to use in my face-to-face classes in Pennsylvania was comparing a Youngstown store to a Boardman, Ohio store, because I taught a lot at Lawrence Crossing, which is our BC3 Newcastle campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell everybody that most people are going to go to the Youngstown store just because they're dealing with larger volume and they're going to have more of the doorbuster items.
Do you think Black Friday will ever go away? I mean, as we are seeing the online retailers like the Amazons pop up, Cyber Monday now coming a couple days after Black Friday, where people can just sit in their pajamas if they want to and buy online. Do you think we'll ever, you know, have where Black Friday isn't really a thing anymore? It's like Black December, like we're just shopping constantly.
I think with the larger retailers slowly declining, I still think we're going to have it, but to a lesser extent. Items like cell phones, televisions, refrigerators, those are always going to be the doorbusters that you can't get online that are going to be available at the store only for those reduced prices. Now, things like the Blu-rays, the DVDs, some of the clothes items. The Keurig was the big one a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Those prices, they'll be the same ones online, my guess, because of shipping. Now, you know, larger end of the sequence, maybe if we change the, you know, maybe if we change the shipping structure, that could change it. But until then, I don't see those larger big box items being available online for the same prices as they are in stores. But I think less people will participate in it.
That makes
sense. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I want to get your take on, and I know, Tyler, we've talked about this. Some retailers have decided to close on Thanksgiving Day, and even on Black Friday, I've seen some, because they want to give their employees the day off and time to be with their family. Consumers, it's interesting to me, some of them really respect that. Do you see that in the loyalty to that brand, that even if they're not open, they will save some of their money and wait until they are open and then spend when they're open?
I'm going to say something weird here, but I really, the people that are out there shopping are going to be out there shopping, whether it's Thanksgiving Day, the day after Thanksgiving, whether it's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are out there doing it are still going to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think because the crowds have declined, that the declining crowds eliminated the people that are going to say, well, I'm not going to go out shopping on Thanksgiving. I'm not going to go out shopping at, you know, 4 a.m. on Black Friday. But if you notice what all these stores are doing with their openings, they're all being extremely diligent on getting their hours out and changing their hours if necessary. I don't quote me for sure on this, but I think last year Target originally was supposed to open up at 7 p.m. and then they noticed Walmart was opening at 6, which Walmart always opens at 6 on Thanksgiving. That's kind of been their thing the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Target switched their hours because they wanted to have it at the same time as Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, I think as long as your bigger places, your, you know, your most popular stores are always going to be Walmart, Best Buy, and Target for Black Friday. If they're on the same page and they're opening at the same hours or close to them, I don't see that changing, and I don't see them doing it unless as organizations they said, hey, we're not going to open on Thanksgiving. I don't see them doing it. Now, the smaller stores, I agree 100% with what you're saying, because
mm-hmm.
they are really deliberately not opening on Thanksgiving, or they're opening at midnight on Friday or 4 a.m. on Friday afterward, just to give people kind of a break for the holidays. But it's the big retailers.
We're talking with Dr. Lou Sabina. He's a professor of business at Butler County Community College, and we're getting you ready for the holiday season. Now, if you are a diehard Black Friday shopper, what retail items generally are on sale or can you get really good deals on?
Televisions. Number one is televisions. For example, we, as I was saying before, with anybody who was listening before, my wife and I just bought a home and we relocated and moved to Florida. And in doing so, we needed new TVs for our house. We waited deliberately until Black Friday last year. We got televisions that were regularly $600. We got them for $250 at Best Buy. We're talking like half off. We waited in line. We knew that's what we wanted to do. There's a 55-inch television. I think it's Walmart that has it this year. I haven't started charting everything out yet. But
you don't have your pie chart yet?
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. That is our weekend activity. But there's a 55-inch television right now that's a 4K TV that's $300. I think it's Walmart that has it, but you're looking at basically $200 off of retail prices. The other item that I would suggest would be MacBooks. You will get, as a student, you'll get the student discount for Macs, which is about $100 off 365 days a year. But during Black Friday, they normally kick off another $100. And as we all know, Mac computers never go on sale. Unless you buy a refurbished open item one, you are not going to get a Mac at a discounted price like you would a PC.
Yeah, I'm so really surprised to hear that,
for
actually.
Me, I'm saying it's the televisions and the Macs. In cell phones are hit or miss, because some of them get discounted very quickly, some of them don't. So that's something that I would encourage people just to go in and research whether or not their cell phone has been out for a while, if the sale's really worth it. But the televisions and specifically Mac computers, that's where you're going to get your best deals.
Why TVs?
I don't know. I wish I could answer that, but I feel like it's been a cultural, traditional thing that happened when they started with the flat screen TVs.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is that, you know, when the flat screen television revolution came out, they were so expensive. I remember buying like a 36 inch television about 10 years ago for $800, $900. And when they found a way to make the technology better and more affordable to everybody, everybody needed to have one of them. And because of that, they've continuously upped their game on television technology. Now you have 4K definition. Now you have the curved television.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making them cheaper, and it's just kind of coinciding with Black Friday. Here's another tip for any of the listeners. Anything that's not a 4K TV, you're going to get unbelievably cheap on Black Friday, because now kind of the standard for television programs and video games are the 4K. If you want something that's not a 4K, you're looking for a television for a second bedroom, for a den, you're going to get it dirt cheap on Black Friday if you go out.
It's interesting that that the savings really are still that good. And if you do your research and know what you want, you could save. I mean, like you said, you and your wife waited. I mean, the savings were really that substantial.
Yeah, there were a limit of two televisions per person, and my wife and I both went. We each bought two, and we stocked our entire house for $1,200. And these are televisions that would have cost us probably regular retail price, $2,400, $2,500. We got them half off, and we did it deliberately. And now we don't need to buy any. But we waited. Why would we spend the money now when we know they're not going to do a sale as good as that one?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We only have a couple more minutes with Dr. Lou Sabina. He's a BC3 instructor in business. And I wanted to get your take on this. It's always so disheartening to me. What is the culture going to be around on that Black Friday? I hate when I wake up, you know, I just had Thanksgiving the day before, and on the news at 6 a.m, it's the stampede at Walmart, and people are just, you know, walking over people's heads to get to these televisions. Do you think we'll still see that, or do we as shoppers have a little more respect for each other this year?
You're always going to see that in some form of another, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was.
Yeah.
Back, I mean, I'm 37 years old. I'm thinking back, for me growing up, it was the Furby craze.
Yeah.
And if any of you remember the Furbies,
yeah.
that was where the stampede started. They started over the Furbies in the late 90s, early 2000s, whatever year they came out. What we normally do, we wait in line in Best Buy and Target, and we find that it's basically people that are like us that have plotted out what they want. And then we go in a leisurely, orderly manner. We get our stuff done at Best Buy and Target, and then we sneak in at Walmart. We'll wait. We will never, ever do Walmart, because it doesn't matter where I am. I mean, last year I was in Florida. The year before, we did it in Youngstown, Ohio. The year before that, we did it in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, like, we never, ever do Walmart right when it opens, because exactly what you just said, that stampede, people stomping over each other. But we wait at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
If you go in an hour after it, everybody's in the store. You can just casually sneak in, and if you have a map and you know where all the displays are, people will take stuff up, pick them up, and not do it. If you're diligent and you search, you'll be fine at Walmart. But I've never had a problem with Best Buy or Target. But in all fairness, I've never gone to Walmart right when it opens,
mm-hmm.
and I don't go exactly for the reason why you said. I don't want to be stampeding over people and grabbing things. I would rather wait until all of that is done and casually sneak in and get what I need there.
He's Dr. Lou Sabina, professor of business at Butler County Community College. So you teach online then, I'm assuming?
Yes, I do. I was at BC3 face-to-face for 10 years. Absolutely love BC3. It's a great place, great organization. A lot of my research is on community colleges and their ability to do partnerships with four-year institutions, and have a great relationship with BC3. I love them, and I'm fortunate that I've been able to stay affiliated with them even in leaving the state. I feel very lucky about that.
Well, I'm so excited we got to speak with you. I kind of want to go shopping with you and your wife next Friday.
Hey, we plan. That's what we do.
He's Dr. Lou Sabina. Again, a big thank you, Dr. Lou, for coming on.
Hey, and anytime, please, if you guys need anything else, keep me on your rotation. More than glad to speak anytime you all need.
I don't think that'll be a problem.
Yeah, will do. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you guys. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Did you know that Pennsylvania leads the nation in auto collisions with deer? Not a surprising fact if you live in Butler County. It's obvious that your car and the deer are damaged, but what about you? You may have injured your neck and not know it. An impact of only 8 miles per hour is enough to cause soft tissue damage and mild whiplash, which is not uncommon after striking a deer with your vehicle. If this happens to you, visit Applewood Chiropractic Center today for treatment of acute and chronic whiplash. Applewood Chiropractic Center, Thorn Apple Drive in Butler. Call 724-283-0518.
Well, the holidays are coming, and that means your office will start receiving tasteless tins of popcorn, boring baskets of fruit and nuts, and a plethora of 2018 calendars. Ugh. Give your clients something better, something memorable, and something that says Butler. Like a custom gift box from Cummings Candy and Coffee, you can choose from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips, pretzels, graham crackers, and cherry cordials. Add in a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Call Barry for your corporate order. Cummings Candy and Coffee, serving the Butler community since 1905 and now in 3 locations.
Welcome back to It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 AM. It's Kayla Molzan in for Dave Malarkey this week. And for this segment, we're going to change gears a little bit and talk about charitable giving. As we approach the holiday season, many of us will not only be thinking about what we hope to get under the Christmas tree, but also how we can help others. Unfortunately, in this day and age, we have to ask the question, is the charity or organization we're donating to legit? To talk on this topic, we've brought in the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau's Give.org. We have Art Taylor on the phone. Art, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
We hear about scams all the time, whether it's senior citizens getting scammed and giving money over the phone. Recently, here in Western Pennsylvania, we had a business owner taking deposits from people to do work, to build them decks, and then never actually doing the work. We have to be so aware today, and I feel like always on the defense, and I'm guessing giving to charities is no different. How can we make sure that we're giving to a trustworthy charity as we're trying to be so generous this holiday season?
Well, the first thing is it's really hard to know if you can trust a particular charity without some help. And so we have this service at give.org that takes a lot of the guessing out of it. We evaluate charities against 20 rigorous standards, and there are over 1,500 nationally soliciting organizations that we've evaluated and about 5,000 locally soliciting organizations. And if you don't find the charity you're looking for, you can let us know which charity it is you'd like us to investigate, and we'll do that. So we want to make it easy for people to understand who they can trust in a world where it's harder and harder to know who you can trust. So that's the number one thing that we want people to take away from this.
So really you're suggesting that Give.org be their first step. So if they're approached, whether it's, you know, something they got in the mail or, you know, somebody's emailing them or calling them on the phone, maybe take a step back and say, okay, head to Give.org, see if they're on that website.
Absolutely, and these are charities that cover every aspect of charitable work. So if you can't find it on our website, chances are it's something that no one's ever heard of before. But there are lots of charities out there. They have names that sound alike. You really have to be careful. And the best way is to not rely on your own devices, but to let the experts help you out.
What do you guys look for? You mentioned that a lot of, you know, organizations have the same name. What kind of standards do you look for to say, okay, you're a legit organization, you know, we're good to go?
Sure. Organizations should have strong governing boards. These are volunteers that sort of meet periodically and oversee what happens in the organization. And we want to look at the quality of that group that is doing that work. We want to make sure that they don't have conflicts of interest. We want to make sure they're not being paid by the charity. We want to make sure that they're meeting at least three times a year and that there are at least five of them, and that they're doing the kind of work that an oversight group should be doing. That's one thing. Secondly, we look at the finances. You know, is the charity spending the requisite amounts on overhead and fundraising and programs? Are they providing solid financial reports so that we can tell what they're doing with the money? Are they getting audits regularly if they're of a certain size? We also want to make sure that they're assessing the extent to which they're effective in meeting their mission. This is an important aspect of charity work. And then finally, we want to make sure that the information they're putting out is truthful. So we'll actually read their appeals. We'll encourage them to produce annual reports that talk about their results for a particular year. And so those are some of the things that, that these standards cover.
Finances are a tricky one because, you know, I can think of a couple national organizations off the top of my head that have kind of run into some fire because, you know, they're spending a lot more on overhead than one would think. More, you know, to have people in the office and more for paper than they are actually helping people, you know, fulfilling their mission, like you say.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a tricky one because somehow we've been led, at least the public has been led, to think that a charity that spends small amounts on overhead is a better charity. But that's not necessarily true. The amount of money that a charity spends on overhead has very little to do with how effective they are in meeting their mission. Now, we don't want a charity spending the vast majority of its money on overhead, but if a charity is spending reasonable sums on overhead, let's say even if they're spending 30% of their budget on overhead and fundraising, mm-hmm. that's still very reasonable. And we should not be penalizing charities for doing that. In fact, if charities aren't spending money on overhead, that's kind of a red flag. You know, you hear these claims that lots of charities make when they say 100% of your money is actually going to go to the program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's so, then how are you operating?
Sure.
How are you able to produce a financial report when I want one? How are you able to cover your facilities and other things that are more administrative in nature? How are you raising money? Because it costs money to raise money. So if you're not spending any money on these things, then something goofy is going on
mm-hmm.
there. It's not likely the organization is telling the truth. Or they found some other person to pay for all of their overhead. And that still doesn't mean that they're efficient. It just means that they have someone else paying for it. So, you know, these are some of the things that we try to help people avoid falling into. And here's one interesting stat.
Mm-hmm.
We found that overall, only about 7% of the charities we evaluate have overhead spending problems, only about 7%. But overall, 45% of the charities we evaluate fail to meet one or more of the other 20 standards that we have. So if you're only focused on overhead, you're going to miss a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we really want to make sure people put less emphasis on that and more emphasis on other areas.
And it's great that the Better Business Bureau has come out with this website, give.org, if you missed it at the beginning of the show, because, I mean, the average person, you're getting hit with so many requests and you do want to help. You don't have time, you know, to do everything that you guys are doing. I'm glad that you did the work for us.
Absolutely. And this is what we want to let people know. We want to get the word out. You know, most people know the BBB as an organization that helps them with their business complaints. And it's a place where you can go to get information on businesses that you want to hire to do different things. And they didn't know about this charity service. But believe me, we have a robust charity service that really helps charities know what they need to be doing in order to get the attention of the public. And it also helps donors who want to make intelligent giving decisions. And I got to tell you, the amount of donations overall is not increasing by much. And so it's really important that we make those donating dollars go as far as they should.
Mm-hmm.
And that means they should be going to organizations that have a chance to solve a problem and not to ones that are just set up in such a way that they're never going to do much.
Yeah, absolutely. Make it count. I know that you recently did a survey, and you found that there are some generational differences in terms of the age of people and how well they check out an organization. Talk to me about this survey.
Really interesting survey. So we generally are worried about millennials because they're so different than every other generation. We kind of want them to follow us, except in this case. I think we need to be... We really need to be following them. They're our role models, as far as I'm concerned, because 61% of them actually talk to their children about donating to charity. And this is really interesting. Half of them always do research before giving. And if you compare that number to previous generations, there's not another generation close. My generation, I'm a baby boomer, I think only about 37% of us actually check out a charity always. And of the generation prior to me, I think they call them the silent generation, they give, I think it's somewhere around 29% of them always do research. So, and here's a really fascinating stat. 4 out of 10 of the silent generation say that they never do research. 4 out of 10, 40% never do research.
Yeah.
But the millennials, by contrast, only 1 out of 10 never do research. So you can see there's a big difference in how millennials view charities and research.
Yeah, and I'm a millennial, so I can say we. I think it's not that we're less giving, but we're more programmed to check everything out because, you know, as we said at the beginning of our conversation, we're so weary because there's scams floating around everywhere. I know I talk to my parents and grandparents, you know, don't just give. You got to check this stuff out first. Please, run it past me.
Right. I hear that a lot, too. And, you know, especially elderly people, they're getting these letters in the mail. And I've had lots of my friends tell me that they have to go sit with their parents and tell them, please, don't do this. They have to get them off mailing lists and other things so they're not just randomly giving to things that will never solve anybody's problem. You know, you millennials, you guys grew up with these supercomputers in your hands. So, you know, it's easy for you to find out anything you want at any time. And, you know, you've grown up in a time when we don't trust anything. We don't trust these institutions. So you combine lack of trust with information, and yes, you're going to be checking out things. So I think that's terrific, and you are my superheroes, so to speak, in how you're dealing with this charity thing. And, you know, here's the other thing. Most of us need to ask this question. When we give, is it about us or is it about the charity? Because if it's about the charity and we're not checking anything out, that's a problem. You're never going to really know if you're solving a problem. So if you're not checking it out, it must be really about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought giving was really about the other person, not really about you. You know, that's just another way of looking
Absolutely.
At it.
Are you doing it for a write-off, or are you doing it to actually help the organization? I hope it's the latter.
Right, or to make yourself feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk to my wife all the time about this. She's really prone to giving money away whenever someone asks. And I say to her, do you have any idea whether they're actually going to do anything good with the money? And she says, well, it doesn't really matter so much to me. Well, it should matter, because why else are you giving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you giving if you don't really care if anything good comes of it? So that's something for us to think about. Those of us who just give because we think it's the right thing to do, we need to make sure that we're giving to have some effect.
Absolutely. We just have a couple more minutes with Art Taylor from the Better Business Bureau's give.org. I invite everybody to check that website out as you're thinking about where to make your charitable donations before the end of the year. Wanted to get your take on this, Art, really quick. Should you be weary, you know, giving over the phone versus online versus some people, you know, do the old school way of writing the check and actually mailing it in? does that matter in a sense at all?
No. I think all of those ways are okay. Now, giving over the phone, you want to be careful about. And we have this magazine that you might want to get. It's called Wise Giving. You can go on our website and order it. We'll give it to you free of charge. That magazine has a list of all the charities. And for older people who don't like to use the computer, they can just flip through that magazine and find the charity. And if it's in the list, fine, you might want to make the gift. If it's not, then you might not want to.
Mm-hmm.
I would really encourage younger people to get that and give it to their elderly parents. Or if you're listening and you're an elderly parent, you might just want to get this magazine. But, yeah, giving over the phone is okay, but you need to make sure that you're giving to the right thing. The really tricky thing is making sure that you're giving to the right organization, because there's so many sound-alike charities. There are over 1.3 million charities out there, and many of them have names that sound alike.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know? You need to make sure that you're giving to the group that you're really intending to give to and not one that has a similar-sounding name.
Absolutely. They're so good, too. When they email you something or even send a mailer home, sometimes it can look so similar to the organization you think it is, but just a few things are off, and it's going to a completely different place.
Absolutely. So you have to be careful. And one of these days, I think we're going to invent a tool where you can just take a picture of the appeal and know right away if it's a good charity or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get to work on that.
I am.
There's some great resources. Art Taylor, thanks so much for being with us. Give.org, all the place you need to know this holiday season.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Thanks, Art.
You too.
Great conversation there. I'm going to take a short break, and I'll be back with more here on It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot has delicious, all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens to make your holiday meal special. Their birds are handled with extreme care and are specifically fed non-GMO grain and are preservative and additive-free. Buy your turkey frozen today or get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. For the tastiest, highest quality turkey or chicken, call the Jones Turkey Farm, 724-352-2450, or visit them online at jonesturkeyfarm.com. The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, quite simply the best.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
DBS Telecommunications, a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer serving Butler in the Pittsburgh area. They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. DBS has been serving the Butler area for the past 32 years. They specialize in phone systems, in custom-designed networks, including fiber optics. They specialize in high-quality hybrid digital systems, 5-year warranties. They specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems, multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging. They also provide cabling for voice, data, and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. We use DBS Telecommunications here at the Butler Radio Network. We've utilized their services for many years. For more info, call them today, 724-285-9088. They're also on the web at dbs-tel.com.
Tuesday night, the Penguins return home after a 2-game road trip to welcome Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres to PPG Paints Arena. Coverage of the Penguins Radio Network begins at 6:30 with Josh Getzoff and Mike Rupp previewing the matchup on Penguins Live pregame. And when the puck drops at 7 p.m., the Hall of Famer Mike Lang and Phil Bork will have the call. Don't miss the Penguins and Sabres on the Penguins Radio Network.
Pittsburgh Penguins Hockey brought to you in part by Tribe Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, Hunter Truck Sales, Thrower Concrete, Monday Shoes, Camisa's Auto Body, Butler Agway, A&D Heating and Cooling, and Cash Dollar and Associates.
While we're all celebrating the joys of the holiday season, we'd like to ask you to pause and think about the many patients who are currently receiving cancer treatments right here in Butler County. Hi, this is Mrs. Claus, and I'd like to invite you to join in on the Hang Tough Stocking Stuffed with Love and Care project. It's really quite simple. All you have to do is go shopping, buy a Christmas stocking, and stuff it with items for a male or female cancer patient, and have it done by December 1st. You can be as unique and creative as you wish. However, there is a full list of recommended items to stuff in those stockings right online at butlerradio.com. If you need some inspiration, check that out. I am encouraging you, your family, your friends, and all your coworkers to help. Just deliver your stuffed stocking to Schneider's 1-Hour Heating and Air Conditioning on Unionville Road, Headlines of Hair Concepts on Evan City Road, or right here at the Butler Radio Network office on Pillow Street in Butler. You can make your deliveries between today and December 1st. Be a part of the Hang Tough Stockings project to help create cheer and bring smiles to all. My elves and I will be delivering the stockings to cancer patients in Butler County in mid-December. So let's hang tough, because together we can be tougher than cancer.
Welcome back to It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 AM. It's Kayla Molzan and Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey this week, and we thank you for joining us on this live show. For this next segment, I'm going to talk to Dan Tobin from the American Red Cross. He heads up the Western Pennsylvania region, of which Butler County is a part of. And we're going to talk home heating safety. Obviously, a very timely topic this time of year because it's getting colder outside. So we're going to get Dan on the phone here. And Dan, I think you're with us. Think you can hear me.
So unfortunately, this time of year, it's getting colder. And I think if people don't have their heaters on, they're much stronger people than me because it is downright cold, and it was cold last weekend. Somebody that unfortunately knows that when it gets colder, the risk of fires, especially home fires, goes up. And I'm so excited to talk to Dan Tobin. He's the Director of Marketing and Communications for the American Red Cross Western Pennsylvania region, of which Butler County falls into. Dan, first of all, thanks for taking time to talk with me today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
As I said, as it gets colder, we're turning on our heaters, and unfortunately, that coincides with more house fires. Do you really see a correlation there during this time of the year, an increased number of fires?
We definitely do. In fact, you know, it's been so busy the last couple months because of the hurricanes, and in one sense, we're relieved that that's dying down, and we want to say we're getting back to normal, but we're getting back to normal right when what we call fire season started. Every year, as it gets cooler out, we do see an increase in fires, and many of those are due to home heating, and the bulk of those are usually space heaters.
I know that the Red Cross really likes to get out in front of this and say, okay, we're going to give you some basic home heating advice, and we're going to talk about space heaters because I know that's a big one. But do you have any tips for people? Just maybe they haven't turned their heaters on yet, you know, or they just did and they're just, you know, getting used to that. Do they need to check anything, check any levels before they flip the heat on?
You really should have your furnace checked regularly to make sure, you know, by a professional to make sure it's working properly. Also, you know, make sure your vents are cleared. If you have a gas, any type of fuel, you know, propane or natural gas, make sure that the chimney area or however it's vented is clear and working, because you don't want carbon monoxide, you know, building up either in the system.
Absolutely. So let's get into space heaters. I know that's a hot topic, and many people have older homes. You know, I do, and the second floor, one bedroom, just doesn't get as warm as the rest of the house, so we do like to supplement with a space heater. Why are these so dangerous, and why do they cause so many fires every year?
Yeah, you know, some of them is the way people use them, and some of it is, especially on older heaters, that just don't have the safety features that newer ones do as well. So it's a combination of pieces that come together that can really cause you some problems.
The space heaters, should you really put them on and leave them on, like, say, all night? You know what I mean? You're sleeping, you put this thing on. I'm assuming that's dangerous, but I also know people that do it.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. You should never run a space heater if you're not home and when you're sleeping. You know, you should be running those when you're able to watch them, mm-hmm. and to make sure, you know, nothing's malfunctioning, nothing's going wrong, or if something does start, you're there to correct it very quickly. You know, if a fire starts, I mean, it's moments before it gets out of hand. So your best bet is to make sure one doesn't start in the first place.
Absolutely. And I know you mentioned that the newer models do have, you know, the tip-over feature where if something would fall on it and it would fall over, it would shut off, which is always good. I know a lot of people don't realize, too, that you should sometimes put, you know, the heater on something so it's not right on your carpet or right on your rug that could potentially catch fire.
Exactly. You should never put a space heater directly on carpet. It should be on some sort of non-flammable surface, something hard and sturdy and level as well, so it's, you know, it's not teetering in the process. And if it is an electric space heater that you're plugging in, you should plug it directly into the wall outlet. Think about that for a minute. You know, think about, Christmas is an ideal time. People do lights, and, you know, they have all these strings of lights, and they put them into a tiny little extension cord made to handle one lamp.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a heater now that's putting out so much power and pulling so much power. If you're going to use any type of a power strip or extension cord, you need to make sure that that cord or power strip is capable of handling the wattage that you're pulling from it, or else it'll heat up and it could potentially catch fire.
Absolutely. I mean, I cover a lot of fires for our news department here, and you hate it when a whole home is destroyed and you ask the fire chief, you know, what do you think the cause was? And he said, I think it was an extension cord, one of those pesky extension cords. It's awful to hear.
Yeah, whenever you can, you should plug directly into the wall. You know, that way at least, you know, you're not going through that extra piece. And, you know, it's a safer process.
Space heaters aside, let's talk about other unconventional ways that some people use to heat their home. Fireplaces, you can't leave those unattended. And the screens are so important, too, you know, to keep that fire in where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, think about it. You know, you have a wood that's crackling, and if embers are coming off and you have carpet right outside the fireplace, you could easily catch a home on fire. No different than a space heater. You shouldn't leave the home if a fire is burning in the fireplace, and you shouldn't go to bed while it's still really burning. You should make sure it's died down and, you know, there's a screen or the glass doors are covering the fireplace as you go to bed, just to keep everything safe.
Absolutely. This one's interesting, Dan, and I'm anxious to get your take on this. When people use their cooking ranges or their ovens to heat their home, we know that's bad, but this happened to me the other night. You know, you're cooking something, you have it on 400, you bring it out of the oven, dinner's over, but it takes so long for your stove to cool down. So I'm thinking, you know, can I leave the oven door open? We're already paying to heat the oven. We might as well get that extra heat out into the room. That's bad. I take it?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't leave it completely open. Now, some oven doors, there's that little, you know, you can open it just a tiny bit, and it'll hold. You know, there's like a little catch.
Right, right.
To let it cool down. I wouldn't say would be a problem, but I wouldn't leave it wide open, not just for the danger of a fire danger, but, you know, say you have a pet or a small child that could really get hurt, or even if you accidentally walk into it.
Absolutely, yeah, that's true. Didn't think about that. I know that, like I said, Red Cross really tries to get out in front and remind us. These are all things that we all should know as homeowners and renters, but it's always good to remind people because you forget.
Well, and you look sometimes and people will say, wow, this is all common sense. But as you say, sometimes common sense doesn't come very commonly. You know, you just don't think about it and you do it. You know, here's another case in point. You don't want to put a space heater, you know, next to a curtain or a furniture. Same with your oven. You know, you were talking about leaving the oven door open. Mm-hmm. Say that door is wide open and right next to it is the kitchen towel. Yeah, you know, it's those things that you're not always thinking about, but they can also cause fires.
Absolutely. And you say it happens so fast, too. You could be, you know, sautéing something and you have your kitchen towel right there and you move and your elbow bumps it and next thing you know, you got a kitchen fire.
Exactly. And a fire, you know, on average, if you do have a fire in your home, you have 2 minutes before it's out of control to escape.
Wow.
That's not a lot of time. You know, 2 minutes seems like a lot of time. It is not, as your house is filling with smoke, flames, you know, complete chaos.
Right, you're panicking. You're not thinking straight to begin with.
Yep. And so it happens so quickly. We were installing smoke alarms the other week in the neighborhood, and this was the first time this has ever happened, to my knowledge. The street we were actually installing on a fire broke out.
Oh, wow.
And it was, I mean, within seconds, there was the building was fully engulfed. And it underscored the importance of what we were doing. But it was eye-opening in a way to see that and see how quickly it happened. It was crazy. I mean, what were the odds? The police, the fire, and the Red Cross were all on the street.
Wow.
And this just happened to break out.
Wow, yeah. If the fire is going to happen, I'd want all those people to be on my street as well. Yeah. We hope it never happens to people, though.
Yeah, and, you know, thankfully nobody was hurt. You know, everybody got out okay, but it really showed all the volunteers who were there that day helping install these alarms how quickly, you know, we say it happens quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think unless you actually see it like that, and that was the first time I've ever seen that, and it was scary to see how fast this fire took off.
Absolutely. That's why firefighters always telling you, and the Red Cross too, to have a plan in place, talk to your kids, because it does happen so quickly and you don't have time to figure stuff out then.
Yeah, and you've got to make sure, you know, a kid's natural reaction in a fire sometimes is to hide. And there's stories you'll hear every once in a while about a child or two children that are hugging each other in a closet and passed away because they went there trying to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And you really got to teach your kids, no, that's not what you do. How do they show them different ways to get out of the house? And here's another one I think people often think is like, oh, that's stupid or it's common sense, but it's not. Make sure you have a meeting place outside. And the reason I say that is think about this. You know, if you run out the front door and your kids run out the back door and you're both outside, but you don't know if your kids are out.
Sure.
And your kids don't know if you're out. Whereas if you've established, okay, if something like this happens, we're going to meet here. You know that everybody's going to come here, that one spot, and you know that everybody's safe and accounted for.
Absolutely. Because how many times do we hear the heartbreaking stories where somebody gets out, it's a family member, it's a dad, mom, kid, and they don't know that everybody's out, and they run back inside, and then they end up, you know, perishing then, where they were okay. But, you know, of course you're going to want to run in and save other family members when everybody might have been outside in the first place.
Exactly. And so, you know, having that plan of how to get out, but also that place to meet is important. And the other real important thing is having working smoke alarms, because that gives you the warning you need so you can get out of the house.
Absolutely. And with just daylight saving time just happening a few days ago, that's a good time to check the batteries in your smoke alarms if you haven't. So if you forgot to do that, and now that that's passed, I would check those and your carbon monoxide detectors as well.
Definitely. We always say test and turn. So when you turn that clock, test those alarms, make sure they're working.
Well, Dan, it's so great to talk to you. You mentioned that this is your busy time. You're going into your busy time of the year, but it's been a busy couple months for the Red Cross. I mean, are you guys hanging in there with all the hurricanes? You do such great work for our area.
Oh, thank you so much. It has been real busy. Our volunteers have been going nonstop. Even before the hurricanes hit, you know, we had local flooding this summer, as we did up in Butler. We also had it in eight other counties in our area. So we were busy there. We had a train derailment. We had a massive high-rise fire. With the deployments with the hurricanes, we've had over 100 people from this area go to help. They were in Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands. We had one out in Las Vegas as well after that happened. So it has been really busy. In my time with the Red Cross, it's the busiest I've ever seen it. And it's humbling, the support of people, the support of our volunteers who just keep answering the call 24/7, the support of our donors who help fund our ability to assist people. It's just the community really comes together to help others, and that's wonderful to see.
Mm-hmm. It's sad to see, but sometimes it takes a tragedy just to see how special your community is, and there are people willing to answer the call and help. I know, just lastly real quick, I know you're always looking for volunteers. If there are people listening today in our Butler County community, should they just go on your website, or what's the easiest way if they say, yeah, you know, I do have some time, I'd like to help?
Yes, go to redcross.org, and there's a section there for volunteering. And let me tell you, too, because a lot of people don't realize this. When they think of Red Cross volunteers, they think of only the people who go out to disaster scenes and help people. And, yes, that is probably the biggest face of the Red Cross, if you will. but we need people from all different skill sets. We have folks who help with blood drives. We have people who come in the office and help with accounting. We have people who answer our phones. They're literally doing that or do follow-up casework. We do a lot with the military, and we have people who just work with our military programs. I have folks on my team that help with public affairs, that when something does happen, they help notify the public and the media of our responses. So there's so many options and so many ways to get involved that if you're looking for a way to give back to your community, you know, we'd love to have you. Go to redcross.org and, you know, get a hold of us.
That's a good point, because I know we saw it with the hurricanes a couple months ago that some people were like, you know, I want to help, but I can't take off 3 weeks to be deployed down to Texas. And I remember speaking to you and you saying, well, you know, you don't have to go down there. There's other ways we can use you.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes what happens, and I don't know if it started yet with the hurricane stuff, but what will happen, you know, they have caseworkers that start working individually with families. Those caseworkers a lot of times never leave their home city because a lot of that's done by phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have people, they call it virtual deployments. They're deployed, but they've never left, but they're working a deployment from where they live.
Oh, okay. Still doing very important work.
Yeah, and it's another whole way to get involved. So, yeah, you don't have to deploy. You don't have to, at 2 in the morning, go to a fire scene
mm-hmm.
to help. You know, tomorrow we have in one of our areas a smoke alarm install event. We have volunteers who their volunteer service is doing these smoke alarm installations. And they get together whenever we do them, and they install smoke alarms in people's homes. So there's all kinds of ways to get involved.
Thanks so much, Dan, for your time. I know people can check you out on the website. You guys have an app, too. You're on Facebook, Twitter, so people can follow you all those ways.
Oh, yes, and thank you so much for having me and you know, being able to talk a little bit about home fire safety and the Red Cross.
It's always great to have you. Thanks so much, Dan. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
All right. That was Dan Tobin from the American Red Cross, specifically the Western Pennsylvania region, which does include Butler County. And we thank him for taking the time to be with us today. It's Kayla Molzan on It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 AM. That concludes today's show. We'll be back with more tomorrow. Myself and Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey this week. It's Your Turn, WISR 680 AM. Have a great rest of your day.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 5858. Pick 3 is 162162. Pick 4, 6975. The pick 5, 07677. The wild ball for each of those is 0. The treasure hunt is 3, 7, 17, 19, and 22. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll free at 1-877-352-6200.
A quick word from your friends at Butler Motor Tours, a local company on South Monroe Street in Butler, online at butlerbus.com. Your headquarters for deluxe motor coach tours, outstanding show and theater packages, hundreds and hundreds of fun destinations. And with the holiday season upon us, here's a gift-giving idea. How about a gift certificate for Butler Motor Tours? You don't have to select a destination for the person that you're gifting. No, just give them a gift certificate and they can put it toward the vacation of their choosing. Get the details at Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. By the way, they're also taking a one-day trip down to the Pennsylvania Farm Show again on January 7th. Get the details on that at their website, butlerbus.com. For holiday gift giving, yes, Butler Motor Tours, 282-1000 or online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com.
At the best of times, being lonely can be dispiriting. But when you're grieving because of the loss of a loved one, you need someone to talk to be with. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique, sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's meticulously designed to help ease the emotional pain, to fill the gap when you're lonely. Men and women are invited to attend, and yes, men too are realizing it's okay to express their feelings at a small group setting. We've held hundreds of sessions in the last 20 years, have helped hundreds of folks to cope with their feelings. We have five programs: a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, for those who have lost a pet, for individual sessions. They're conducted by our own trained bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706. 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
CBS News is up next here on WISR 680 AM.
The classic hits are on Real Hometown Radio, WISR.